It's a blustery midsummer's day and we are at Charleston House in the South Downs in Sussex. Charleston is one of those houses that sticks with people. It was the summer house and eventually the permanent residence of artists Vanessa Bell and Duncan Grant, and all manner of interesting minds came and collided here. And so it makes sense that it was in the hallway of Charleston that I bumped into Jamaica Kincaid. Jamaica is a writer, she's a gardener, she's a great thinker. And her writing, along with Charleston and the work of Vanessa Bell, really informed Why Women Grow. For me, being here, talking to Jamaica at Charleston, within the walls that Vanessa Bell lived and cooked and created, is a really, really emotional experience. And this was the conversation Jamaica and I had.
I want a teacher who can guide me to knowledge, and the garden has done that. Hello, I'm Jamaica Kincaid. I live in the state of Vermont, which the French had called the Green Mountains, and it is very green and mountainous. Very strange that I live in a mountainous state because I grew up surrounded by the sea.
So Jamaica, we just bumped into each other in the upstairs landing of Charleston House.
Yeah, I was just touring the house and then had to leave because I found it overwhelmingly emotional, just the lives of these people. I can't think of any other house, historical house I visited that I felt that way about, and I'm trying to, as we say, process it and trying to understand why. See if I can piece it together. When I was 16, 17 years of age, my parents' mother really sent me to America to work in a household. This is in 1966. So the mother of the household was a feminist, and among the books she just gave me to read, Simone de Beauvoir and Virginia Woolf. And until then, I had not known that people continued to write literature. And I had a colonial education. My education was probably designed by someone who went to Eton and Cambridge and so on and ran the overseas education department of the little brown and black people. Literature stopped with Kipling,
wow,
whom I hated. So I was just surprised that people had continued to write. So I sort of had this idea of imagining a writer, but people didn't write anymore, or so I thought, until that moment of being given these books and I began to read. So I, if anything, just the difficulty of my own late adolescent, late teenage years existence, you know, I was a servant in a house of people who the mother was an artist and the father was the television writer for The New Yorker. 3 years later or so, 4 years later, I myself was a writer at The New Yorker, but at the time I didn't know that that would be possible. So anyway, to Charleston, mostly I was thinking of the pain of being an artist or the pain of living. I was very aware of the lives lived that produced. That there was one portrait of Vanessa where she's all in black with one of her shoes, yeah, the back slipping off. It was very, again, pain isn't quite the word. I can't find it right now.
She spent a lot of her time here,
yes,
bereaved. Is the thing. It's so interesting that you pick up on that, because Vanessa's bedroom looks out onto the garden, and I think the garden was, she in many ways was the gardener, and She gardened here and she lived here increasingly in the wake of her eldest son's death. And for me, that's something that feels so heavy in that bedroom. Feels like such a space that it's almost as if she just walked out of a room. A lot of the rooms feel that way.
Yes, it's very strange to be in a house like that. It's not ghostly, it's just the absence of a presence. And I don't think I've ever experienced such a thing in a house you are just looking at as a tourist.
I've read so much about your garden, and I'm really curious as to what it looks like now. Like, what did you leave behind before you came on a plane to Sussex?
Oh, gosh. Well, about to bloom. Blooming over the Lilium canadense, which is a shorter version of the Lilium superbum, or superbum, as I call it. It's sort of the same lily, but taller. But I have a Lilium canadense that is as tall as a Lilium superbum. It's about 7 feet tall. They're supposed to be 4 feet tall. I have a theory about the garden, that the garden and the gardener have a response to each other. Often we want so many different things from a garden. We want status, satisfaction, but we don't often look to the garden to tell us something about ourselves or about the world. And I don't mean the chemistry of things. It speaks to you, it's telling you something. I first began to notice it when I realized that my friends and I would buy the same plants, and my plants were always taller. And the crucial thing is that they're stooped like me. They look like me. It's not some special thing I do. I really think that it's something between us. When I see the flower stooping, I think, oh gosh, I should stand up straight is one thing. Also, when I see them like that, I remember that I used to be ashamed of being so tall when I was a child. I was always the tallest person, boy or girl, in class, and how embarrassed I was, and I was flat-chested. See, I'm reminded of myself, but not strangely with regret. It just simply is, oh, that's me, and that's it. I used to try to grow California poppies. I could never grow them. Then I, one year, in around 2008, I was teaching at Harvard, and I was having a difficult time, and so I decided I would look for another job, and I found a teaching job at a college in California called Claremont College. As I was leaving, suddenly I had an enormous amount of California poppies growing everywhere. And it was as if the garden was saying to me, don't leave, we can do this, we can grow California poppies. I stayed away for 4 years, and ever since I came back, they turn up everywhere, the California poppies. So again, an example for me of the garden in sympathy or in empathy with the gardener. So you're asking me about my garden. I consider it a form of writing, a form of philosophical, historical examination. It's one of the ways to enter the world, so to speak, and sometimes the earth.
I'm so glad you brought up writing, because it seems to me that gardening and writing are incredibly close for you.
That is very true. I don't think I would know how to do one without the other, though when I started to write, I wasn't gardening, though my first book was a collection of short stories called At the Bottom of the River. It has a lot of plant things in it. For me, the garden is a book, a way of entering into thinking, and thinking leads to writing. So I'll spend days in the garden trying to finish a sentence. Just, you know, one half of the sentence is written, but the other half can't be written because I don't understand the weight of it, the ideas in it. I mean, I understand it, but I can't put it down yet. And so I'll go out into the garden. Then the garden itself has so much writing in it. Each plant has so much writing in it. For instance, just telling you about Canadense and things native to the middle is Virginiana, and things native to out west is Colombiana, and so on. All of that is, you know, about writing, and it's about literature, really.
You write about your own mother showing you the garden, but also, you know, you've dedicated My Garden book to your children, who often felt in competition with the garden for your attention.
They hate that dedication. They're almost 40 and they still hate that dedication. They quarreled about it. How could you tell the world that you often loved the garden more than you love us? They found it humiliating. I taught them to make a martini, and so at 6 o'clock they would bring me a martini, and then after they read that, they stopped and decided I was an alcoholic.
I think educating your children to make a martini is a life skill.
Yes, they didn't think that.
There are such strong tethers between your mother, your garden, your children. There's this lineage.
Yes. My mother was a gardener, but in a kind of godlike way. She would plant things that she liked at one moment, and then after a while she didn't like it and she would destroy it and something else would grow. But she had an incredible gift of liking something she ate, collecting the seed, planting it, and it would flourish. And there's one example I have it. She had eaten a soursop and liked it, planted it. It grew into a very great tree near the house. And she had had a passion fruit. She liked it. She planted it. It grew up the soursop tree. But it made the soursop tree vulnerable to pests. And red ants began to live in the soursop tree. Then they began to come into the house, and she was very annoyed, and so she set the whole tree on fire.
Wow.
Just one day it was burnt, and you can, you know. She planted a breadfruit tree. It was the most beautiful breadfruit tree you ever saw, and a hurricane came and knocked it down on the neighbor's house.
No.
Yes.
This is incredible.
She was just a force. I've begun to like her more as I get closer to her age when she died. Maybe that's a good thing. We'll meet somewhere in the other world and we can be friends.
How has gardening changed what it's meant to you throughout your life? You've spoken about your garden now. Has it always been the same thing? Has it changed?
Oh, well, yes. It's been an education. I got to know the world in a way that I wouldn't have if I had been something else, I think. Even though I teach, I don't like people to tell me, to have learned something and then tell me what they know. I want a teacher who can guide me to knowledge, and the garden has done that.
Jamaica, this is a question we ask all of our guests. Why do you grow?
I feel something, but it's not a feeling I have ever found expressed. It's just something that I don't even have words for, but I feel most like myself. When I turned 70, I didn't think of old, but 74, I think, as I plant another tree, I have to accept that I'll never see that flourishing of the tree. But I do it anyway. Things like, oh, the ashes, my ashes should be sprinkled here. And so things like that. But things like that would have made me horrified. Just like, oh, dying earlier. But as I get older with the garden, I think, oh, that's all fine. Something goes on, if not my life, something goes on.
big thank you to Jamaica Kincaid. If you're unfamiliar with Jamaica's work, I recommend you start with My Garden Book. It's my absolute favourite, and I dip into it all the time. Thanks as well to Charleston House for hosting us, and to Holly Fernandez for the beautiful photographs of Jamaica, which you can see on my Instagram at Nauticulture. If you're new to Why Women Grow, do check out our first series, as well as my book which inspired it, Why Women Grow: Stories of Soil, Sisterhood and Survival. This episode was produced by Holly Fisher, and the theme music is by Maria Chiara Agiro. Thanks to our sponsors, Canongate and Uprooting by Marshall Farrell. Winner of the Nan Shepherd Prize, Uprooting is a lyrical and reflective search for home, moving from Trinidad to an idyllic English country garden. Uprooting by Marshall Farrell is out now. If you've enjoyed this episode of Why Women Grow, it would mean so much if you could rate and review the podcast on whichever platform you're listening in on, or share it with someone you think may enjoy it.